gentlemen, meet your Thunderbolts.
The Thunderbolts, are they the exciting new heroes the world needs?
Thunderbolts, strike!
Today makes at least half a dozen times the Thunderbolts have done the job we used to depend on the Avengers for.
It allowed us to move among you, disguising who we really are. The Masters of Evil!
In what is now becoming an old story, the Thunderbolts once again save the city.
Enough of this hero talk. You will do as you're told.
But... He's right. You may be wearing a Songbird costume, but underneath you're just screaming me.
I can expose all of you right now. So you see, you really have no choice.
You know what? We're done playing these parts. It's time to live these parts.
No one betrays Zemo.
Figures, just when we go in on this hero thing, our blood runs out.
Avengers, Defenders, Thunderbolts, I make any team better.
We're Norman Osborn's A-team, and he's the big man in charge now.
This isn't the team I used to lead.
You, honey, are under arrest.
You have to fight for what's right every single day, bulletproof skin or not.
The Thunderbolts have worked hard to change people's minds about us, but apparently we've got a ways to go.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Justice, Not Entirely Dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast. Hey, what's up guys? This is Derek. I'm going to be one of your hosts tonight, but I am not alone. I am joined by my fellow co-host. Why don't you give a shout out and let everybody know who's here tonight?
What a revolting development. It's me, Mike.
Yeah. So this is one of those Thunderbolts episodes where we're not doing the usual format. You know, the usual format is to talk about an issue of Thunderbolts and then a historical issue. But this is one of those rare occasions where the historical segment, it's just too big for the back half. It's too big, Michael. It's too big.
I bounced back and forth like that until I realized it was too big for me to judge. He was too big.
So we're going to be talking about a special arc that features a historical appearance of one of the Thunderbolts members. It is actually the first appearance of Songbird. And I just figured, you know, instead of just covering like the snippets that she's in the select two issues, why don't we talk about the whole Project Pegasus saga, which ran through Marvel 2-in-1 from issues 53 to 58. It had cover dates of July 1979 to December 1979, but the actual on-sale dates were April 3rd, 1979 to September 4th, 1979. Cover price for all the issues was a whopping 40 cents. It went through a series of different creative teams, but the writers on this were Mark Gruenwald and Ralph Macchio. Pencilers were John Byrne and George Perez. Inkers, Joe Sinnott and Gene Day. Letterers, Diana Albers, Irving Watanabe, John Costanza, colorist, Bob Sharon, Carl Gaffert, and editor, Roger Stern. And this is hopefully a short and sweet kind of summary of what happens in the six-issue arc. This six-issue multi-issue arc starring The Thing and featuring a prominent first appearance from a notable Thunderbolts character, Screaming Mimi, a.k.a. we know her as Songbird. Project Pegasus, the new energy research base that more or less doubles as a prison for supervillains, hires the ever-loving blue-eyed Thing as part of their security detail. The Thing meets his new boss, head of security, formerly Marvel Boy, now calling himself Quasar, but not before getting into a brief skirmish with him. The Thing and Quasar fight off an invading Deathlok robot set to self-destruct, and the Thing even manages to get shot in the arm by his future laser. Elsewhere, Thundra is recruited to take part in a scripted pro wrestling match. Her manager intends for Thundra to throw the match against the four-woman team called the Grapplers, Titania, Poundcakes, Letha, and Screaming Mimi in her first appearance. But she ends up mopping the floor with the entire team. The Roxxon Corporation, meanwhile, has planted a mole within Project Pegasus, who releases the supervillain Nuklo from his prison. The Thing teams up with Bill Foster, also known as Black Goliath, also known as Giant Man, to recapture the villain. Thundra, Screaming Mimi, and the other grapplers are all hired pawns of the Roxxon Corporation, and they are sent to break into Project Pegasus and plant components for the Roxxon Mole to assemble his Inth Projector. The grapplers leave Thundra behind, only for the Thing to discover her in the base. The Thing brawls with Thundra while Quasar confronts and defeats Letha and Screaming Mimi. Bill Foster takes down Titania and Poundcakes as Giant Man, causing Thundra to surrender to the Thing and his allies. The childlike Wundar inadvertently releases prisoner Solar from his cell. Solar frees Claw and they try to escape the prison. The Thing, Quasar, Giant Man, and Aquarian, the now adult-like by way of a cosmic cube Wundar, stop the pair of villains from escaping. However, the Roxxon Mole has transformed himself into Inthman, a living space warp that threatens to engulf Project Pegasus and everyone in it. This time, the Thing and all his guest stars, including Thundra, team up to save Bill Foster and put an end to the Inthman. Wundar, now with the adult mind of the Aquarian, hugs his Uncle Ben goodbye and goes off to have his own adventures, or just goes back to his home planet like Poochie. Ultimately, Roxxon's plot is undone, but they continue to plot from the shadows. Dun, dun, dun. And that's hopefully a pretty succinct synopsis of what takes place in the six issues for Project Pegasus. So, yeah, I mean, the main reason why I figured we should talk about this is it's always kind of been my mandate or my goal is I do, as part of the historical segment, you know, want to tackle early or, you know, first appearances of Thunderbolts characters along with any, you know, kind of random history, you know, random issues of first appearances. But this is, you know, this first appearance kind of took place in a somewhat, I mean, I feel like it's a seminal story. Like it was like one of the earliest stories I can remember being brandied about as like having a trade paperback collection and stuff like that. And it's, you know, obviously because of the John Byrne and George Perez art, you know, it's probably, you know, something that people look back on rather fondly and everything. And then also, I guess the interesting notion is, I mean, I guess I don't know, maybe I've not read enough Marvel 2-in-1 to comment on this. And I know Marvel 2-in-1 typically had their, you know, A and B and C subplots, you know, like comics back in the day, you know, they had their little subplots and narratives that ran through to make it sort of a continuing, you know, soap operatic drama, you know, as you were reading from issue to issue, but they had their main stories that any new reader could kind of pick up and latch on to with, you know, exposition and backstory and all that kind of stuff. But I kind of feel like this is one of the first, like, you know, long running arcs that ran through that they tried to do something where, you know, yes, it still was the Thing teaming up with a guest star of the week or the issue or the month or whatever you want to call it. But they also tried to sort of roll that all up into like a giant package at the end where, you know, everybody who he had been teaming up with to that point, you know, or fighting against at that point, you know, we're all involved in sort of the climax of this story. So I thought that was kind of cool. Like it kind of, I don't know, for me, it kind of reminded me of what they tried to do with Action Comics Weekly when they made it a weekly book. They had all these different sort of backup features, I guess, or anthology strips, you know, where it was like a random assortment of characters. And then by the end of it, the intention was to have them all sort of participate in a giant story that involved everybody, or kind of like, you know, some of those Brave and the Bold arcs, you know, that everybody teamed up with one or two people in that revival from the late, what is it, the late aughts or whatever, right? And you know, that issue of Flash and Doom Patrol that we covered, you know, like they that was the individual story, but it kind of led up to sort of a climax with like all the characters participating in kind of a, you know, a climax or a finale or what have you. So, you know, to me, this seems like similar. But so you were telling me like you this is the first time you've read this then.
Yeah, like this and Marvel 2-in-1 are kind of a blind spot for me. Like I have read issues of it before, but like I've never really done a deep dive into it. So like this was mostly completely new to me. Like, and like it's weird to say, but I think I feel like Project Pegasus itself is kind of a blind spot to me because I think it's kind of like before my time. Like when I think of a supervillain like prison, like I think of the Vault, basically. Like I think that was the Vault was a big thing when I first started, like, you know, reading comics and getting back issues. And like, you know, Project Pegasus would come up from time to time, but like mostly it was like, you know, we send supervillains to the vault, like, and stuff.
Right.
And then, like, you know, I think, you know, you get into the 2000s and it becomes like the Raft. Like the Raft is like the new like supervillain prison or whatever. And then, you know, they go back and forth between some of these things. Like, you know, you've got like what's the one that's in the negative zone? Like, I don't think that it exists
anymore. Oh, like, wasn't it like something 42?
Yeah. Prison 42 or something.
Yeah.
They had that for a while. And then, like, you know.
You know what I think is interesting, though? I mean, I don't think I'm wrong. I feel like Project Pegasus kind of was like this cat, like it's weird because it's got its history, it's got its origin in a lot of like DC stuff, I think, because there's like a lot of comparisons to like Jack Kirby stuff, so they kind of compare it to like Project Cadmus at DC, and Project Cadmus wasn't so much like a supervillain prison, it was more like, you know, a scientific research facility. And I feel like when Project Pegasus gets mentioned in modern context, like you think you're not familiar with it, but I feel like if you read like Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova and all that stuff in the, you know, in the 2000s, which I know you read some of, if not like a lot of, like Quasar and Dr. Necker and all those characters, like I'm pretty sure they were all working for Project Pegasus.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that was less of a, you know, a lot less of a supervillain, you know, I don't know, detention center, but it was, you know, the scientific research lab. And I feel like it's interesting in this because it's like, it's kind of, you know, a little bit of A and a little bit of B. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it's kind of like, not only do they incarcerate certain individuals, but it's also like they're trying to like either help cure them or do science stuff with them, or, you know, like that whole kind of thing. So yeah. It's like it's kind of like touch and go with what you're, you know, it, as opposed to like when you talk about stuff like the vault and the Raft, you know, you're kind of like, oh, or that whatever the hell it was called, Section 42 or whatever, that they all get shafted off to the negative zone. Like those are, you know, prisons, detention centers, even, you know, probably, you know, to make it all controversial, even, you know, gulags in some cases, right? Like, but this is, you know, kind of not 100% the same thing, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I definitely see the comparison to like, yeah, Cadmus or whatever. Yeah, but I was going to say, like I said, I have encountered Project Pegasus from time to time, but I feel like, you know, not in its heyday, I guess. And this is kind of, you know, it's like, you know, it's not heyday, but it's like, you know, it's invention. It's like, you know, its first major like, you know, story arc. So,
yeah.
But and I also liked like you mostly picked this because it's Screaming Mimi's first appearance, but there's also a couple other like Thunderbolts like connections in it that I didn't expect, like maybe like kind of tangentially, but like Nuklo is becomes part of the V Battalion, like the Thunderbolts
okay.
fight him like eventually, and then he's in the two Citizen V like miniseries
too. Okay,
isn't
okay?
He's the son of like the Whizzer and Miss America, isn't he? Like, I forgot what his backstory was. Like, it's something like that. Like,
that like sounds right. I guess, but I don't know 100% for sure.
Yeah, I didn't look into it, but I kind of vaguely. That's why like he gets like kind of grandfathered into the V Battalion, basically. But like he was like their natural like son or something like.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It says he is the son of two characters featured in the Golden Age, the Whizzer and Miss America. Yeah.
Yeah. So like there's him, and then like Solar too shows up as part of like the Counter-Earth Thunderbolts, like later in the original run, where like, you know, the T-Bolts are stranded on Counter-Earth and they encounter like, you know, Counter-Earth's like Heinrich Zemo.
Okay.
And he has his own like team of Thunderbolts, and one of them is Solar. So like, you know, so I was like, oh, that's, you know, there's two more Thunderbolts connections in this story. But yeah, like I know you love The Thing, and you know the Marvel 2-in-1 was like basically The Thing's book, basically.
Yeah, so,
like,
yeah. I mean,
I was kind of reading this, and I was like, oh, I see why Derek, like, you know, this popped up to Derek, because you know The Thing is the main character here, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I like The Thing. I've always kind of liked The Thing, and this, you know, kind of like Marvel team up was Spidey's book. You know, Marvel 2-in-1 was The Thing's book. I mean, I had intentions, I think, at certain points to do like a deep dive and read like every issue of Marvel 2-in-1, but I don't think I ever really truly accomplished that. I think by this point, I'd say I probably have read, I don't know, you know, certainly more than a handful, right? Like I'd say maybe I've read like, you know, 30 to 35% of the series, you know, like just through, you know, kind of through research and kind of through just reading stuff for fun, you know, type thing. It's like, I know I've read, you know, some of the early issues. I know I've read a lot of the issues where it dealt with like Shang-Chi and Spider-Woman and obviously this Project Pegasus, you know, when he has the kind of the reconciliation, I guess, with Sandman, like how that kicks off Sandman's whole kind of, you know, good guy, you know, face turn or whatever, you know, and so like there's certain issues that, you know, certainly stand out to me and everything. But, you know, this wasn't something, again, I think, you know, I've sort of talked about this on other shows, which you may or may not have been on. But I mean, I think sometimes it was always easy for me to overlook titles that weren't, I mean, usually the names of the characters on these are pretty prominently featured. But I think like you, I think I do have kind of a bit of a blind spot when it comes to either anthology series or series that are not kind of out and outright named. Like if it wasn't named Spider-Man and it's named Marvel Team Up, do you know what I mean? Like that was something where it wasn't exactly my go-to. Like I remember, like to put it in context, right? I remember for a while thinking as a kid, oh, I've got all the issues of Spider-Man with the alien costume. And then I kind of realized, oh, I don't have any of the Marvel team ups with the alien costume. And then I went and started collecting those. But that was like kind of an afterthought. So I feel like sometimes books like these, depending on how you come to them, can kind of be an afterthought. But then they can also kind of be like this, you know, hidden diamond in the rough type thing as well, because it's fun to read, you know, and it's fun to see the team ups and everything like that. I was kind of curious though, like, what do you, I mean, specifically since we're a Thunderbolts podcast and specifically like focusing on Screaming Mimi, like what was your take on seeing her featured in some of these issues, you know, and like, was there any like early installment weirdness? Like, was it kind of what you expected? Like, I guess I'm just curious, like what your impressions were of her first appearance.
She didn't like talk a whole lot. Like, mm-hmm. I feel mm-hmm. like, you know, maybe part of the early installment weirdness and like, you know, was that like they didn't really have a like exact like, you know, grasp on her yet. So like they just kind of, you know, she does. It feels like they were almost playing it as if like she doesn't talk a lot until it's time for her to like scream, like mm-hmm. do her sonic mm-hmm. thing, like
almost like a Black Bolt type thing.
Yeah, like, like, so I mean, she did have some lines, but like she didn't really, you know, talk a whole lot until it was like time for her to do her, you know, her whole deal basically. And like I think, like, you know, later, and maybe that adds an element of like almost like, you know, mysterious like badassness to her, like in this like first appearance or whatever, like, you know, but like, you know, it's like the home, me and the thing me and Justin always joke about with the Homer Simpson thing where it's like, you know, that little guy in the corner hasn't done anything. And, you know, when he does something, it's going to be good. Like, you know, like
yeah,
that chick in the white wig hasn't done anything. And, you know, when she does something, it's going to be good. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, like later, like, you know, in subsequent appearances, certainly like by the time she shows up in like Under Siege or whatever, everyone thinks she's kind of a joke or she's a, you know, overcompensating, like low level, like sort of supervillain. So.
Right.
But
I mean, she puts up a pretty good show in this. Like she, you know, gives Quasar a run for his money, at least, or at least, you know, that ups the stakes for that character. I mean, since it's, you know, a kind of fairly, you know, good versus evil, you know, black, white type comic book, you know, it's like they're the bad guys. So ultimately, you know, Quasar is going to pull the win out at the end. But I mean, it is kind of, to me, it's interesting because she starts out kind of with this group of chicks and they're like wrestlers and they go from wrestlers to having superpowers, you know, and so it's like, oh, well, you know, I think that would be a shock reading this like for the first time, right? Like you might not necessarily expect her to have her, you know, sonic scream or whatever, even though like, you know, coming to this as a, you know, somebody who's well versed with the character, right? You're like, you might almost be jonesing for it. Like, it's like, come on, when's she gonna do the sonic scream? You know, like you're waiting for it the whole time or whatever. I mean, you could also make the comparison to, you know, to the female Furies from the New Gods. Because that's kind of what they were going for as well. Like Titania's kind of like Big Barda, Letha's kind of like Lashina, Poundcakes is kind of like Stompa, and Screaming Mimi in this case would be the Mad Harriet kind of, you know, pastiche or anagram or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah,
you know?
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that kind of thing. I mean, I was thinking about it more reading it this time. You know how Thundra is into Ben Grimm, you know, it's like, you know, she comes from the planet where, you know, the males are the weaker sex and all that stuff. So she's like super impressed with Ben Grimm because he's super strong and all that other stuff. But there's also that like Maxima aspect to her where she's kind of like, you and me, Ben Grimm, we need to go off and become mates, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, oh, well, she kind of has something in common with Maxima too. So that's kind of, you know, some of my takeaways from having, you know, read this, you know, for the episode and everything. I mean, I think the art's really fun, you know, so.
Yeah, the art is great. No, what I wasn't expecting, and it's not like really Thunderbolts related, but like I didn't know who like Wundar was.
Okay.
I was like, oh, he's like, and I know who Aquarian is, but like, okay. I was like, oh, he turns out to be Aquarian. Okay. Like, cause all I knew of Aquarian was he was some crazy Steve Gerber, like, you know, thing like that, like didn't last for very long and only shows up like, you know, almost as a joke, like cameo, like, you know, every so often now, but like after I read this whole thing, I like looked into the character and I was like, oh, I didn't even realize like he was supposed to be like a Superman pastiche.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, you know, Steve Gerber got in trouble for it and then they had to like change him. Like, you know, there was a whole deal with him. Then I was like trying to look up like where since like I think I only knew him from like a Marvel handbook like entry. Like I was like the Aquarian, okay. And I might have like read something about him, but it didn't stick with me. But then I was like looking at where else has he appeared since then, and it hasn't been a whole lot, but like I think he was part of an initiative team like during the like Civil War era.
Oh,
and then I guess he was like bitten by a like Marvel zombie or something and put into stasis until he could like cure himself of being a zombie. And then I think the last time he showed up was like right after Ben and Alicia like tied the knot and he was like at Ben's like bachelor party or something.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But like, yeah,
that's weird. I feel like a lot of those characters that get the short end of the stick. Cause I was doing a lot of research on Namorita. And so she shows up a lot in Marvel 2-in-1 because I think, you know, Wundar was one of the characters she was kind of flirty with or whatever. And so that's why they have that little shot of, you know, her, I think in this story is like a callback to some of those earlier issues. But I was just thinking about it in terms of like that, the wedding you were talking about, like, if I recall correctly, it was either that wedding or that slot relaunch where it was like, didn't they like gather like all the FF's allies in like a couple pages? And I was like, that's the last time Namorita has appeared in like modern continuity, like at all, you know? And I was just like, I'll be damned. Like nobody's done shit with her. And, you know, I mean, maybe for good reason, no one's done shit with Aquarian, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was just like, you know, a random background character at a bachelor party or whatever, like, which is cute, but you know, it doesn't necessarily amount to anything either.
If Namorita is another one of those characters where like, I don't, well, she's almost like the female Yellow Jacket where it's like, is she still alive? And then I was like, yes, she is. But how, like, because I've got like three different like endpoints for Namorita. Like I was like, OK, she died in Civil War. Then Nova like plucked her from the past.
Right.
And like she was like around during that run. And then there was also that character, I think her name was like Water Serpent or something, that was part of Chris Yost's New Warriors run. And she was supposed to be like a clone of Namorita or something like so. But like none of this stuff has been like tied together, basically. So I'm like, which Namorita was that? Like, you know, like
I would guess it's the one that was plucked from time, because never, I mean, they never sent her back anywhere. I think it's
like the female Yellow Jacket, because she like they resurrected her during that Dead Avengers like event or whatever, and then she never showed up again.
And
did she die again? Like, is she still out there, or you know?
Yeah,
like,
they just never dusted her off after that. But
I mean, you know, then I mean, Namorita only shows up as a face on a screen in this. So like, but I'm just saying, you know, like that's like as an outshoot of our talk on Aquarius, I was kind of like, Aquarian. I was just like, you know, what some of these characters, it's like, you know, they're waiting in the dustbin for someone to like, you know, go and like, you know, do something new with them. But
yeah, yeah.
I think, speaking of dead characters, I'm pretty sure Bill Foster is still dead. Like, I think it's his, like, nephew, like, who is, like, Goliath now.
Or, like, his kid brother or something. I don't remember. It was some relation.
It was Bill Foster Jr. Yeah, basically, yeah. Or something. Yeah, like, so. But, yeah, like, I when I saw him, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, Bill Foster, like, you know, okay. Like, he was pals with the Thing. Like, that makes sense. Like. And then I like that whole bit where, you know, the Thing's kind of like, look, like, you don't need to call yourself like Black Goliath. Everyone knows you're black. Like, dude, like,
you know, it's not a secret.
And I like how Goliath is also like, you know, like, oh, like this is my new costume. Like it's leagues better than like that old costume. And I was like, is it though? Like, you know, like maybe like leagues, like you're exaggerating. Like it is a little better than your first costume, but you know,
it's not. Like, I mean, we're talking like, you know, Hawkeye in the jungle bikini gear versus Hawkeye in, you know.
And then, yeah, like, I liked that whole fight with Deathlok. Like, that was cool. Like, you know, and you know, he, quote unquote, dies in this, too.
Right.
I mean, he was.
Never... I mean, I kind of thought of it like I think most people rationalize this as it's not like the real Deathlok. It's like, you know, it's just kind of like another Deathlok bot that came back to
do
the deeds.
Yeah,
and had
some explanation for that. Yeah. But no, like I do appreciate, like, you know, I liked that bit where Deathlok like shot the Thing with a laser and like Ben was shit, I'm bleeding.
Yeah, like, yeah, that was surprising. Bleed. And he does. I mean, it kind of has consequences, like, because for the rest of this arc, you know, his arm's in a sling, like it messes with him. Like, you know, normally he could easily get out of certain scrapes if he had the leverage to do it with both arms. But because one of his arms is in a sling for like the rest of the arc, like he literally does, you know, have an arm tied behind his back, you know, most of the run, right? Like, so there, that makes for, you know, I guess some interesting conundrums, right, that he gets into and everything.
Yeah, another character I'm not unfamiliar with, but like I'm unfamiliar with this, like, you know, part of their history, like when they were just kind of starting off as Quasar. I mean, like I've obviously read Quasar when he's shown up in Avengers and like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and like, you know, Nova or whatever. But like I've never really read, you know, when he was, you know, Marvel Boy or,
right.
You know, when he like how he started out or, you know, even, you know, any of this stuff. Like, and it's funny because like, you know, he's supposed to be a kid, like he's supposed to be kind of a rookie like superhero. But I feel like, you know, the art kind of draws him as a rugged, like, you know, almost like a rugged young man, but like, you know, like yeah, looks older yeah. than like they play him, I guess. So,
and well, I guess it depends on your definition of kid, but yeah.
Like, you know, when it get, by the time it gets to like, you know, the Kree Skrull War or whatever, I feel like they're drawing him like a lot, like, you know, smoother, I guess, like, you know, like,
oh, you mean the Galactic Storm or whatever?
Or Galactic like, Storm. Yeah.
Like when Capullo is doing the book and he's a little more lithe, a little more kind of thin.
Yeah, he looks more like his age, I guess. You know, like you said, I'm sure they mean like he's like in his like early 20s or something, like as a kid. But like, you know, it just looks like he, you know, they draw him kind of, you know, I don't know, craggier in this, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I've read those Cap issues because I know I did a whole read through a Cap at some point. So, but it's like it is always interesting when you do stuff like that because usually, depending on why you're doing it, your focus is I don't know, uniquely positioned. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like reading this and focusing on the Thunderbolts aspects of this story and then going off into tangents about like the other characters that show up, you know? And it's like, I think if, you know, if you're doing a Cap read through and you're focusing on where is Cap throughout all this chronology, but then he happens to, you know, meet Marvel Boy who becomes Quasar, it's not the same thing as like sitting down and kind of going, okay, this is the first time, you know, Wendell Vaughn shows up and I'm going to read all the appearances of Wendell Vaughn up until Quasar number one or up until, you know, Galactic Storm or, you know, whatever your cutoff point is and be like, ah, I see how it, you know, now I'm caught up to where I was introduced to the character and see how it transitioned from, you know, Marvel Boy to Quasar to, you know, Project Pegasus to, you know, a member of the Avengers or whatever.
And then, like, another kind of minor, like, T-Bolts, like, connection is, like, Claw shows
up. Yeah, yeah.
We've talked about Claw on this show a number of times, too. And, you know, he's like, you know, I feel like there was a long time where it was like, you know, when Claw's defeated, he disintegrates and, like, all that's left is his little sonic arm or whatever. And then they, like, reconstitute him from the sonic arm. And
this is no exception.
Yeah, exactly. And
I thought it was interesting, the little detour, because it's like clearly Solar like and Claw were bros, but it's like it did crack me up reading this where it's like Electro is kind of bedridden because like I think all his bones are broken or some shit. And so first he breaks in and he's like, oh, maybe Electro can help me escape. And then he sees that, you know, he's all strung up and everything. And he's like, you can't even fucking walk, like you're not going to help me. But then what was funny was he goes into Breakout Claw, sees that all that is left is his, you know, sonic gauntlet or what have you, gets mad and throws it against the wall. And then that somehow reconstitutes him. But even though at that point, Claw is still pretty weak. And it cracked me up where it's like, oh, he's going to let Claw, like, you know, hobble with him to the escape pod, but he wouldn't have done that for Electro. No. So I was like laughing.
Mummy Electro, yeah.
I was like, screw you, Electro. I do it for my homeboy Claw, but you're not my homeboy Electro.
He could have put mummy Electro, had so many bandages on him, he looked like a mummy. So he could have put like mummy Electro in a wheelchair and then like, you know, fire blasted the wheelchair like in, you know,
I got like an emergency. Yeah. Got an emergency. But, I got a sick, well, it's funny sick man here.
It's like you got Claw and Screaming Mimi in this story, but they don't ever like really interact,
encounter one another.
Then they become kind of minor like arch nemeses and Thunderbolts for, you know, every so often. So But yeah, like I, you know, I enjoyed reading this. I enjoyed, like, this is, like I said, this is a blind spot for me, this kind of era and this book in particular. And like I enjoyed it. Like I enjoyed the, I, like I said, the art was really gorgeous. And like I didn't expect either, like, you know, the villain of the piece, like the what was it, like the Nth Man?
Yeah,
I think he's called, like, yeah. So like I've never heard of him before. So
yeah, the thing that was surprising to me too was like I did keep wondering like who his shadowy overlords were, and then, you know, when it's revealed it's Roxxon, you're kind of like, oh yeah, that, you know, that seems to fit, right? They're always sticking their nose in the middle of people's bizwax and stuff. So I was like, and they're the super secret evil, you know, corporation or whatever. So I was like, okay, that lines up. Yeah.
They want to, you know, it's like the Magia and the Mafia. It's Roxxon and Exxon. They don't want to use the actual name, but they don't want to get in legal trouble. But they'll
go ahead and name it something else.
Yeah. I think, like, I was reading it, I think that's why Wondar becomes the, like, Aquarian, because they were like, oh, he's way too close to Superman. Like, you know, you got to change him up, basically. Like, so
Yeah, that was always, you know, what I had heard as well, that, you know, basically Wondar was, you know, some kind of childlike Superman or whatever, you know, so. Which, I think is funny, too, because that was my commentary. But, you know, the whole, you know, OK, it's like, so long, Uncle Ben, I'm going to go off and do special things or go back to my home planet or whatever that's exploded, you know. So,
yeah. No, it's funny. It's like most of the grapplers, like they get killed by Scourge in the bar with no name. But I think the only reason Screaming Mimi survived is because they probably didn't remember her. Like, I think it's like, you know, Letha and Pound Cakes get like gunned down in the bar with no name, but like, you know, they probably didn't even remember Screaming Mimi or something. So that's why she survived. But
nice. Saved by accidental forgettery.
Saved by obscurity. Yeah. Uh-huh. But yeah, like, again, like I said, like in, I thought it was when Nuklo showed up, I was like, oh shit. Like, that's another, like, he's going to fight them. And like, you know, I think it's like in the '30s when Hawkeye is leading the team, when they first encounter the V Battalion, and like Nuklo is one of the, like super powered, like agents of the V Battalions.
So. Cool. Well, I mean, you know, we certainly have that to look forward to.
We'll get there eventually. Shag, I know you're listening. We'll get there eventually.
We'll have more new episodes, Shag. anyway, but yeah, this is, I mean, that's basically, you know, I don't know that we have anything more to say about this other than it, you know, it's a fun book. It's got some, you know, great Byrne and Perez art. Like the team ups are fun, you know, of course, the Thing is a character in his own right, and he sort of, you know, moves the book along and everything. I think it's fun to see where, you know, where Songbird, you know, Screaming Mimi, you know, first showed up and everything. Like, even though this is sort of, you know, it's very minor, right, in her creation. Like you said, she doesn't have that much dialogue. She's not quite a fully fleshed out character. She's kind of just part of a team of background, you know, villains and stuff, but, you know, eventually they'll flesh her out and shape her out to become, you know, the character we know today. So
I was going to say, this is, I guess, a little timely, but I read some rumor that, I think some like Stranger Things actress or whatever is like rumored to be in the Thunderbolts movie. They haven't announced who she is yet, but people are speculating that she's going to be like Melissa Gold or, you know, Songbird. Hmm. I don't know, she's like a fair skinned like teenage girl or something. Mm. So
okay,
they're like, oh, maybe she's gonna be, you know, Songbird or something, but I guess we'll see. Like, I think we've talked about it before. It's like, I don't have a lot of confidence that the Thunderbolts movie will reference any of the classic stuff, but it would be nice, like, you know. So
yeah, it doesn't seem that way, does it?
No, but oh well, I guess we'll see.
I guess we'll see.
Well, we can all, we can always hope, and we can always hope that, like, when they do a Thunderbolts Marvel Legends wave, they'll give us some, like, classic guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Dinosaurs, purple skies, motorcycles, the hero who cries, all on covers of comic books that sell the best. But what sells more than the rest? Monkeys, covers with monkeys. Yes, you know you gotta stock the monkeys. Hey, hey, stock the monkeys. Hey, hey. Celebrating the tradition of apes in comics, for 2024, Gorilla Grodd has transformed JL May into JL April. Honestly, he does that a lot. Exploring a phylum of amazing apes, such as
Batman Annual number 23,
Wonder Woman number 170,
Kong on the Planet of the Apes, issue 1,
Angel and the Ape,
The Helmet of Fate, Detective Chimp,
Showcase number 77,
JLA versus Godzilla versus Kong,
Swamp Thing volume 2, annual 3,
Kong Gorilla issues 1 through 4,
with a host of podcast all-stars like
The Bat Pod,
Resurrections, an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast,
Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast,
Dolly for Flanger,
The Quarterbin podcast,
Coffee and Comic,
Once Upon a Geek,
Fanholes podcast,
Married with Content with John and Maggie,
Campus Comics cast,
and many more. Look for the hashtag JLApril2024 on social media, the podcast crossover event that doesn't monkey around.
JL April.
Really? Monkey around? This is what you're giving me? I don't know why I agreed to this.
Stick to the script, monkey boy!
All right, well, if anyone listening has any comments, questions, and or concerns, you can reach us at fanholespodcast@gmail.com. If you want to check out the backlog of episodes of Justice Not Entirely Dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast, you can do so over on the Blogspot. That's fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. You can direct download all the backlog of episodes there, along with all our other shows. And we are on social media. We can be found on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter/X. We appreciate all the likes, hearts, shares, and retweets that we receive. And we can be streamed. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Play while it lasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. So until the next time, this is going to be Derek WC screaming off.
It's Mike. Bleh.
Bleh.
Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Kids were laughing in my classes while I was scheming for the masses. Who do you think you are? Dreaming about being a big star. They say you're basic, they say you're easy. You're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping in the nosebleeds.
Yeah, Derek, if I was trapped in prison and I broke out, and I would immediately go to your cell and try to break you out, too.
Nice, then nice.
All that would be left would be your arm, basically.
Okay, likewise.
It's like your arm holding a bag of, like, Sour Patch Kids, and I'm like, you maniacs! You killed him!
I guess I would have to get back on the Sour Patch Teat if someone locked me up, you know?
I throw your severed arm against the wall and you like reform from the Sour Patch Kids or something.
Man, as long as I don't go back to playing patty cake with the lizard, I think I'll be fine, you know?
And we go over to the other cell and it's just Justin all bandaged up and we're like, oh, we're not taking Justin. Like, no, never mind.
But I could help, guys. Not wrapped up like that, you can't.
I'm looking it up now. Like, Sadie Sink is the actress's name. Mm. I don't know, but here's her IMDb. But people claim she's going to be Songbird in the Thunderbolts movie.
But what if she's just replacing Steven Yeun as a Sentry?
Maybe she'll be the Sentry. I don't know.
She'll be the Sentry now. No one will see it coming.
Yeah.
I mean, I see why they would think that. Like, it looks like she's got like a nice red head of hair, you know?
Yeah. I guess we'll see. Like, I'm sure it'll be something stupid. Yeah. She'll be the Sentry or something.
Right. I mean, Songbird would be something that I looked at, you know, and went, oh, yes, that looks like the comic book I read when I grew up or whatever, as opposed to most things I look at where I look at it and go, who the fuck is that supposed to be? I'm like, I'm an expert in comics and I can't recognize you. Your character design has a flaw and a problem.
You failed.
Yeah. When you make your Harbinger in your Crisis television the animated movie look like freaking Nova that's purple, like instead of the George Perez design, you failed.